You're listening to the Just One Outdoors Podcast.
Hey guys, before we jump into this week's episode, wanted to let you know of an awesome opportunity for you guys. We've teamed up with the Camo Preacher and Bear Level to give away a three-day hog hunt in Central Alabama. It's going to be a blast. Head over to our Instagram to find out more details on how to get entered and what's involved, and we hope to see you there.
Well, John, you walked up to our booth here today, and you said you're an ex- or a former conservation agent.
A retired game warden.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, and man. Are we sure we want to have? No.
Yeah. I need to know how they think so I can think like them. And then you told us that you had quite a story about a tree stand accident that you'd like to share with us. What can you tell us?
In 2012, I had a son that was in the military, and he came home and was going to school in Edmond at UCO. There by Oklahoma City, and I got him a place to hunt pretty close to where he's living, and so we went out and scouted this area and found a place to hang a tree stand. We didn't have one that day, so at a later date, on November 6, 2012, I decided to go hang a stand for him and just surprise him, and I went out and was hanging this stand for him, and had an accident, fell 20 feet, and ended up being flown to the ICU in Oklahoma City, and spending 22 days in ICU with 23 broken bones.
Oh, boy.
And it about killed me. And I was a member of this organization that we're at now, and it kind of put a halt on my hunting for a few years till I developed a bow where I could just – I lost the use of my left hand. I had to retire after that. And so I had to develop a bow where I could just slip my hand into and shoot it without gripping the bow. So I'm basically a handicap hunter, but I'm still bow hunting, and that's awesome. I'm using a longbow or self bow. So.
And it's a bow that you made yourself?
It's a bow I made myself, and I just made a special grip on it where I could just slip my hand into it and continue to hunt. And I've killed 5 record book bucks in the last 6 years with it.
Wow.
So it's been pretty rewarding to get back into it and not let that accident, you know, keep me from hunting.
Yeah. So what's your bow look like? Like you said, you slide your hand into it. How'd you come up with the design, I guess?
Well, it kind of morphed into that. I had one design that I just built a little strap onto it that kind of held my bow onto my hand, but it wasn't really making it stable enough. So I had to make basically a glove out of clay that hardened. That it wouldn't, I could slip my hand into it and it wouldn't move. It wouldn't torque on me. Huh. And I've got a picture of it here, but I'm going to bring it out here and shoot it probably tomorrow.
Okay.
But if you're going to be here, I'll stop it by and show it to you. But I got a picture of it here that kind of explains it a little bit better, but it's interesting. People usually come up and ask a lot of questions about it whenever. Here's kind of the glove, and it kind of, and you just,
wow,
you slip your hand into it, and I don't have to grip the bow.
Yeah.
So does that look like it's got leather on the inside?
It's got leather just to kind of cushion it.
Make it a little bit more comfortable.
But that's what it.
That's so cool.
So, but it just allows me to. Otherwise, I'd have to hunt with a crossbow. You know, and it's just not as rewarding. This is just, you know, it just gets me back in the woods and lets me continue to hunt. So,
going back to your accident, you said you were setting up a stand. Was it a commercially bought stand or was it a homemade stand?
No, it was a commercially bought stand. And what happened is, you know, I was always real careful about hanging these stands, but I got in a hurry that day and forgot my safety belt. And this was a big tree that I could sit on the limbs, you know, and work hands-free. And I was sitting on this limb, and I pulled the stand up to me, and I got it securely strapped to the tree where it wouldn't move. And I started to get down, and I thought, well, my son's going to be bow hunting, so I need to clear those limbs on the other side of the tree where he can swing out and bow hunt. Mm-hmm. And I just stepped on the stand to try to start sawing this limb off, and something happened. And I didn't, at the time, it knocked me out where I don't remember anything about the accident.
Wow.
And so when I woke up and laying on the ground, I woke up about an hour later and just confused about where I was and what I was doing, what happened. I looked up and saw the stand. I thought, well, you know, I was up there at one time hanging that stand. Now I'm down on the ground. Somehow I've fallen out of a tree. Yeah. Still didn't know what happened till later. And what had happened was when I stepped on that tree, it had two cables that supported the tree stand, the platform that you stand on. And they had a plastic sheath around them. And what it's supposed to keep it from water from getting in there.
Weathering.
And water had gotten underneath that plastic sheath and rusted both those cables in the middle. And as soon as I stepped onto it, it broke and just, it came out from underneath me like a trap door.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so it just, and I hit the stand on the way down and it almost took one of my ears off and knocked me out.
Yeah.
And so, they sewed my ear back on at the hospital, and I ended up with 23 broken bones, and then lost. I destroyed the bundle of nerves in my shoulder. I guess I tried to hang on when it happened.
Yeah.
And they tried to do surgery to get my hand back, and it didn't work. So I lost the use of my left hand.
Oh, man. So, you said you laid there for about an hour after you fell unconscious. How did you get from there to the hospital?
Well,
it was going to be my question.
It's real interesting. When I left the truck to walk into the hang and stand, my cell phone was laying there on the seat, and I didn't really want to take it in there because I thought this is going to be quick getting in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to leave my phone in the truck, and I thought, you know, I'm supervising a lot of guys, and I was a supervisor at the time, and I had a lot of guys I had to. To answer to, and I thought, you know, one of those guys might need something, so I decided to just stick the phone in my right rear pocket before I headed in, and when the accident happened, I didn't remember the phone was there, but I was checking for injuries. I thought I might have had a broken bone somewhere sticking out, so I was checking for that, and I felt the phone in my pocket, and so I was able to, I didn't think to call 911, but my son was in class at UCL, which is about 45 minutes from where I was. I kept calling him and kept calling until it bugged him enough where he answered the phone. And I said, man, you got to get me some help. He knew exactly where I was because we picked this tree out. And so he was able to call for help and get the EMTs coming to me. And then they had to call a Metaflight to get me out of the woods and take me to OU Medical Center in Norman, Oklahoma City, rather.
Now, being an agent, have you ever received calls like that from other people?
I've had to assist guys in rescues like that. So it was a turnaround, you know. But I made a lot of mistakes that day. I speak to groups probably 7 or 8 times a year that people have these wild game dinners and beast feast or whatever they call them.
Mm-hmm.
And I speak about 7 or 8 a year, and I relate the accident to them. And then I speak, most of them are churches.
Yeah.
And I work a gospel message into it and stuff. Awesome. And it's been rewarding to pass that on because I'll relay the mistakes I made and try to get them to think about not making those same mistakes. And I've got friends that have hunted all their lives and they said, man, we do things different because of what happened to you.
Yeah.
So it's been rewarding.
It has, but it hasn't, yeah. It's the Lord's obviously had a special meaning for that accident and that it happened to you and knew that you would pull through that and that you're able to share that story and tie that into the gospel and the faith.
Yeah,
and that's awesome.
It saved lives both physically and spiritually. You know, it's been rewarding. You know, it started off, hard to talk about, but it's now it's just a message that needs to get out there and people really relate to it. Cause speaking to hunters most of the time.
Buzzard Roost Saddles made right here in the great state of Louisiana should be on every Louisiana bow hunter's list as a must-have in their hunting arsenal. Buzzard Roost Saddles achieves comfort through adjustability for those long day sets during the rut and also provides the maneuverability to get up and move when you see the need. Buzzard Roost Saddles was created with the need to lighten the piro as well as the backpack to go deeper than everyone else. Louisiana bow hunters are a mixed bag, and Buzzard Roost Saddles is the tool to fit any job. Whether it's public land, private land, hardwoods, pines, or even the bottomless swamps, Buzzard Roost Saddles has what you need to stay mobile.
I think it's really cool that you relate it back to the gospel, and it really brings in the verse that talks about, God works all things together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose.
Right.
And it's really cool that, this bad thing can happen, and now you're using it to talk to, like you said, hunters who about safety, but also using it as a platform to share the gospel and spread the gospel. And I think that's really cool that through that you were able to do that. And then on the flip side, now you're back into hunting, and it may look different than before, but now you're back doing what you love.
Right.
So that's really cool.
Well, one of the things we didn't talk about this before we started, but one of the things that when I was laying there after I woke up, I kept trying to fall asleep. I knew I needed to stay awake. And the best way I knew how to do that was to talk to God. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, you know, it's interesting. It wasn't one of these desperate pleas that you hear people say, you know, Lord, get me out of this and I'll do better. It wasn't like that at all, because I had a, you know, my faith was a big part of my life. And so I had a good relationship with Christ. And so what I did was I just went over scripture that I could remember and went over, I sang hymns that I could remember and did that to pass the time till help arrived. And that helped keep me awake. And
how long did it take for help to get there?
About an hour.
Wow.
So it was, but it was interesting, because it was just, you know, in that, having that conversation with God, it's almost like somebody was sitting there with me and just having a conversation. It was, mm-hmm. you know, it was comforting. And some of the scriptures I could remember really helped me out to stay awake and to keep me focused. So.
Would you mind sharing any of those scriptures?
Well, one of them was Romans 14:7-8. It says, for none of us live to himself and none of us dies to himself. So if we live for the Lord. If we die for the Lord. So whether we live or we die, we belong to the Lord. Mm-hmm. So I knew right then, you know, I didn't know if I was going to live or die. And I thought, you know, if I live, I'm going to recover and be with my family. If I die, I'm going to be with the Lord. So yeah. Either way, I was going to be okay. And so that was one that was really important to me, because I knew if I died, I was going to go to heaven. I was mm-hmm. going to see yeah. Jesus. So I knew I was going to be okay either way. And one of the hymns that I really remember that brought me a lot of comfort, especially after I was going through scripture and stuff, was I just kept singing this, the chorus to "It Is Well With My Soul." Mm-hmm. And so I knew, you know, that brought me a lot of comfort.
Yeah. So. Man, that's incredible. I mean, that's to fall 20 feet and have that happen. I've heard of a couple people who do that. And, you know, like you said about your buddies who it changed how they hunt. Right. Now, especially just from a tree stand, what things can, I mean, with your experience as a game warden, what can hunters do to avoid accidents like that? I mean,
that's part of what I share when I talk. It's there's basically three things that I remind him to do. Is you know, this is taking a stand or putting one up is one of the dangerous activities that hunters will do,
mm-hmm.
and it's not good to do it by themselves. Mm-hmm. You need to take somebody with you. That the additional help is incredible, and they, you know, something happens, you got somebody there to help you.
Yeah.
So, don't. It's not something they ought to do by themselves. People die from this every year.
Mm-hmm.
They'll fall while putting one up or taking one down. So, I encourage them to take somebody with them and not do it alone. And same way with their spiritual walk. I say, you know, we're not made to walk through this world alone. You know, have somebody that you can pray with and go over scripture with and study the Bible with.
Yeah.
You know, do that with somebody. And I relate that to that. And the second thing I tell them is make sure you check your equipment. Because what happened was this thing broke on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them to put the stand up on a tree or a pole a foot off the ground and get on it. Make sure it can support your weight. Because if it can't, you fall on a foot instead of 20 foot.
Mm-hmm.
But make sure all the cables and replace them every 2 or 3 years. You know, replace the cables and chains and straps, because that thing can wear out.
Yeah.
So make sure you have good equipment and check equipment. And I tell them, you know, make sure you're well equipped to in the scripture where you can handle what the world's going to throw at you. You know, make sure you know the word and you're well equipped to handle situations like that. And then the third thing I tell them is make sure you wear a safety strap. You know, I forgot mine that day and didn't wear it. Mm-hmm. And make sure you're strapped in every time you leave the ground, whether it's hanging a stand or hunting from an elevated position or whatever. Make sure you're strapped in with a safety strap. And then I ask them, you know, where is your safety strap attached in your life? Is it attached to your friends, your work, your pastor, whatever? It should be a strap. You know, your safety yeah. strap should be attached to Jesus Christ.
Wow, I like that.
And if that's, you fall, then
you have someone there to hold
he will you. Save you.
Man, that's yeah. really good.
So, you attach that safety strap in the wrong spot, and right. you're going to fall a long way.
Yeah, if you count on someone else to save you, you know, Acts 4:12 says salvation is found in no one else. Yeah. You know, so if you're attached to something else, then you're attached to the wrong thing.
Yeah, I like that.
That's really good. So kind of want to be respectful of your time, let you enjoy OJAM. Let's say we do this section or this segment in our podcast called Around Our Campfire, mm-hmm. and it's kind of that last piece of advice that you would give a new hunter or even just a hunter in general. What would that be to someone you're talking to?
Well, you know, hunting is not just about taking game. It's about making memories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what people get hung up a lot. It's not a competitive sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's going out there and enjoying your company, enjoying your family and your friends, and making those memories. And that's probably the most important thing I can tell a young hunter is don't get so hung up on you have to harvest something to enjoy it. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's just all about the whole experience and making those memories.
Yeah, so, that's so true. So. I mean, especially for the young hunters who, you know, get on to social media and just see big buck after big buck after right. big buck, or, you know, trophy animals, and get caught up in that and want to do all that. You know, I've had just as much fun killing a big buck as I have watching someone kill the smallest spike and just being right. like, this is awesome, and loving it every second of it, because that's what it's about. It's about the community. It's about sharing it. And, you know, ultimately it's about putting food on the table for right. your friends and family.
Well, I've killed a lot of big deer in my life, and probably the most rewarding one that I've killed was after I made one of these bows at the first one I went to, this OGM, I killed a doe with it. And I had got more enjoyment out of that than killing probably most of the big bucks I've killed.
Yeah. So, has a lot of meaning.
Had a lot of meaning.
I'm and sure. First one after your accident, probably.
First one after the accident, know, after yep. I built those bows that I could shoot with my hand, that was pretty special yep. too.
I mean, it doesn't matter what it is at that point, just being able to be out there and for you to be able to slip your hand into that bow
right.
and just sit at a base of a tree even, yeah. probably had a lot of meaning that, you know, meant something.
Well, I almost
special
gave it
you.
Up. You know, I almost yeah. gave up bow hunting because I thought, you know, I don't want to hunt with a crossbow. And I didn't think I could do this again because I tried several different ways and almost gave it up. And I thought, you know, we're going to figure out a way to do this. And this accident hadn't stopped me from doing what I want to do. You know, I fish all the time. Mm-hmm. I hunt when I can't, you know, as much as I probably ever did. And I had to come to a point where am I going to let this affect me the rest of my life, or I'm going to use this accident to prepare me to serve and do the things that God wants me to do. So,
man, that's such a good outlook. That's such a good outlook.
And I mainly speak here around Oklahoma, and you know, I've got four or five that I've got scheduled to do, but you guys are from Missouri or wherever, Arkansas, where I'll go anywhere to tell the story. So if you've got anybody out there that wants somebody to come speak at one of their events, I'm available. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll keep you in mind because we know of a lot that.
If any of our listeners would like to get a hold of you and maybe invite you to, like you said, like their beast feast or whatever,
right.
is there some way that they can get a hold of you, social media or something like that? We don't want to drop your phone number on.
Well, I'm on Facebook. There, but, I mean, okay. and so... John Cunningham, you know, I'm on Facebook or whatever, but you can, and I spell my name J-O-N, first name, but
okay.
I'll give my information to you guys and you can keep it. And if they want to get a hold of you guys,
absolutely.
You can pass it on. So.
Absolutely. Well, John, I really appreciate you being on. We really appreciate you being on and yeah. taking the time to talk to us because, I mean, it's a good reminder for us who go out and hunt a lot to, I mean, whether it's climbing up in a saddle or, you know, hunting can be dangerous. And you need to take the proper steps to be safe. So I really appreciate your time today and also your outlook on this and using it to spread the gospel.
Well, you're sure welcome. I enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot, John. So.
Hey, guys, this is Jason Grace with the Oklahoma Self-Bow Society right here in north central Oklahoma is where I'm from. But the Oklahoma Self-Bow Society, of course, is throughout the whole state of Oklahoma. We're here live at OJAM and second day of OJAM. This is Friday. OJAM started Thursday. Always traditionally, OJAM is during spring break with Oklahoma schools. You know,
oh, nice.
So we try to capture a fun family event for the whole family and teaching bow building, flint knapping, and the art of making primitive arrows. All primitive stuff. So
that's pretty cool. I do not have a ton of traditional or primitive experience, so it's cool to experience this and see, you know, people like Brian and I were talking earlier when we were looking at the staves, like it goes from something that looks like almost like that
oh yeah
to something that looks like a bow, and it's really cool to see the transformation and how it how from the start to finish product.
The start to finish is really cool, and as far as bow building goes, I started when I was 16 years old, and here I am, 37. And this is my 8th year as president of the Oklahoma Self-Bow Society. But this organization is really special and dear to my heart. Not only do I love primitive archery, but the people that get involved in this field, they're just richer, more in-depth individuals that care more about you personally. And it's just like the greatest group to be hanging out with. My best friends are part of OJAM and Oklahoma Self-Bow Society. So
that's really cool. And one thing that we've noticed just, this is our first year here, is a lot of the guys who we've got to talk to have told us that, I've been coming for the past 6 years. Wow. I've been coming for the past 8 years. And it seems like it's almost a tradition for just about everyone here.
Yep.
And it's kind of cool that you're passing down the tradition, too, of the primitive archery and primitive arrows.
I tell people, I said, hey, you're going to meet your next best friend at OJAM. That's how cool this event is, But a little more about OJAM and actually what's going on here is like Brian and
Austin
said, is we're taking like a raw log, we're splitting it with wedges, drying it out for a few years, taking the bark and sapwood off, and we're building a bow out of a tree, ultimately. Just like an Indian would fed his family with, that's what we're teaching people to make, so.
And it's taking time. Like, some of these guys have been working all day to get the bow to where it's at.
So this will be the second day. So they worked all day yesterday. And they worked all day today, and they're getting close. I just kind of made a round before I got on the mic. I told these guys, told Austin and Ryan that I needed to go check on everybody. They make me wear a white hat at OJAM, and it kind of signifies that, hey, this is the president guy. He's the one that keeps the order. And it's quite a load, but my yellow and red hats, which are my teachers in the camps, the guys that are wearing the yellow hats are my more experienced bowyers. They're the ones that are comfortable doing and showing showing the bow making. And then the red hats are kind of up-and-comer bowyers, or maybe they've built one or two bows, but they're not really comfortable with saying, hey, I can tackle any obstacle on a stave or not. So that's kind of how it works. You become a red hat after you build a bow a few years. We want to captivate you as a teacher, because the more you teach, the more you learn. When you start teaching, you just learn more. And then from red, you go to yellow. And then, of course, we also have hats for just our normal volunteers. We can't run OJAM without people running registration and helping doing other things, and we give those orange hats. So we kind of got a hat system and a hierarchy, hierarchy here at OJAM. So
that's awesome. On your guys that are over here building bows and your different camps, how many of these guys are first-time bow builders?
I would say, we've got about 100 people building bows here at OJAM, about 35 to 40 in every camp. So we got 3 different camps. And out of those 100, I would say probably 60 to 70 of them are brand new bowyers, building their first bow ever at OJAM. The OJAM did not come from us alone. You guys are Missouri boys. Mm-hmm. I'm an Okie. Us Okies used to come to Missouri and go to Mojam. I don't know if y'all ever been to Mojam or even heard of Mojam.
I've heard of it.
But Mojam was the original bow building jamboree. Okay. They're going to have their 25th year in Marshall, Missouri, coming up in July. What happened was, is that's in July. And in Missouri or Oklahoma, it's not really bearable to be hanging out outside.
Yeah.
So these guys, not me, I'm not one of the original founders. They went to Mojam. They're like, hey, it's too hot. Let's do ours during spring break in Oklahoma. Yeah. We're going to have some cold OJAMs. We're going to have some nice OJAMs. We're going to have some, some really windy, wet OJAMs, But all in all, it's a lot more comfortable working, because you're working hard on these bows, working up a sweat.
Yeah. So one thing that Brian and I were talking about is, do you know how many of these guys, girls, whoever's building a bow, do you know how many are taking it and actually harvesting an animal?
So, man, that's a great question. I do not, because archery is such a dynamic sport.
Right.
Ultimately, you can come and build a bow and not necessarily have a goal of harvesting a critter with it. Every bow I build or give away to somebody, I hope that they make blood with it. That's really
right.
What I'm after. I built my first one when I was 16. I was a compound shooter through high school and all that. And when I turned 20, I actually drew McAllister Army Ammunition Plant. I don't know if y'all know what that is or not. We could. It's a traditional only hunt. Really? And so when I turned 20, I'm like, I'm trad only. You know, so I'm 37 now, 17 years. I've killed over 75 whitetails with a self-bow, elk, javelina, turkeys, bear hunting in Alaska, caribou hunting in Alaska. So I'm ate up with it. It's my passion, and nothing like building something of your own with your own two hands and going out and harvesting a critter.
Yeah. A lot of our listeners seem to be more of the compound. So what would be... What made you make the switch from the compound to the traditional?
You know, so I'm actually a hunting guide by trade. I manage a big recreational ranch in north central Oklahoma. That's my passion. You know, my dad was a hunter. My brother's a game warden for the state of Oklahoma. You know, we eat, sleep, and breathe hunting and fishing and the outdoor lifestyle.
Yeah.
And for me, I was a guide when I was 18. Guided for Cabela's guided for different ranches around where I grew up, and we have a program called DMAP, and with the DMAP, Deer Management Assistance Programs, what that stands for is you're trying to harvest extra does to try to balance that buck to doe ratio.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got all these tags, and there were some years that I'd go out and shoot 13 or 14 deer with a compound, you know.
Yeah.
14 does. You know, so pretty soon, you know, you're like, well, I can kill that deer any angle, any distance, mm-hmm. you know, and within reason, you know, inside 50, 60 yards, I'm going to get the job done with a compound. Right. So at some point, you know, for me, it's like, this is not a challenge no more. How do we make deer hunting more exciting? How do I bring another element? You know, like, well, you know, I challenge your listeners, you, Austin, Brian, pick up something trad, not even a self-bow. Self-bow is kind of even another level, a recurve, a long bow. Try to learn to shoot it well. It's not easy, you know. So we've gotten away with sights, you know, let off, all these technology advancements, and, you know, it's not really that challenging anymore, you know. So to go to that next level and actually trick a deer's senses and try to get close and look for the right angle. You know, you can't kill a deer at all quartering with the self bow. Not do it right, you know. So, you know, it's a hard game to learn. We've all, you know, lost a few deer probably, or if you're not very experienced, if you hadn't, but ultimately that challenge is what I was looking for, you know, as a young man.
And I think I've had conversations with the guys on our team and buddies of mine where it seems like this isn't like a general rule, but a lot of hunters seem to go from, like, they start off rifle hunting, and then they move into the like maybe a crossbow even, and then they're like, you know, I want some more challenge. And it's kind of like a de-evolution of the hunter, of where they get so used to, like, I hunted 1 year with a crossbow because I just didn't have the time to put in to become effective with a bow. And I killed one deer and was like, yeah, no, that's too much like a rifle. I need to take that step. So I think every hunter is on that journey of slowly getting back to kind of the more primitive ways of hunting because
for sure. And
adds to it.
Yeah, you get a taste of that primitive stuff and you're like, man, this is super challenging. And you might even revert back to, say, if you're a crossbow hunter and you shot compound and it got too easy, and you may even revert back and say, okay, maybe I can't do the trad stuff and I want to go back to compound. But you may never pick up a crossbow again. But ultimately, you know, Austin, Brian, the thing, I'm pro hunting. You know, we cannot battle each other. You know, as far as, you know, there's lots of bad legislation even in our state in Oklahoma, but we got to have more of us out in the woods, you know. So if we like our lifestyle, whether you got a bow that you built by hand like me that didn't cost you any money, you know, I'm not saying it didn't cost you, the staves are expensive, but that's not going to Pittman Robertson money. We need people buying bows, arrows, ammunition. You know, there's a big value for those guys, but at the same time is, if you're looking for a challenge, the primitive self bow deal is a super, super big accomplishment.
I think the self bow too, just the accomplishment and the connection that you have with that bow. You've created that bow with your own hands, and you've used it in your hands that created that bow to go out and harvest game with.
Yeah.
And provide.
It's surely a deeper, richer experience, you know, in that, you know, You got to get close, folks.
Yeah.
What's like the max range for? So I
just told you I've killed a bunch of critters. I'll just tell you, like, my furthest critter I ever killed was 27 yards, and that's a long shot with a self-bow. You know, I want them 7, 8, 12 yards is where I want them, you know.
You
want
to be right there.
Yeah, you want to be able to count the hairs on their nose, you know. Yeah. So.
Is that off the ground or out of the
I prefer to, you know, I'm still, I consider myself young or middle-aged, and I do like to hunt out of elevated stands, saddle hunt, do a lot of that. I do hunt off the ground, kind of depending on, man, these mics are picking up the pulleys on that tiller and tree. Holy smokes. Guys, a tiller and tree is how we tiller and make the bow bend the same way. So we put it on there and stand back and able to pull on a rope and look at those bows as we're tillering a bow. Anyways, I don't remember where I was going with what I was saying, but that noise through this microphone was
you were talking about the richness that you get and how many deer you took and your distances that you've taken.
Yeah, so the distances, you know, you want to get close, you know. So hunting off the ground or in a tree stands were what we was talking about. And like I said, I prefer elevated. I've killed them off the ground. I do like to hunt out of a ground blind sometimes with a longbow. You know, out of a ground blind, you got to really have a taller type ground blind. You know, I'm not real effective for some reason, like sitting in a chair or on my butt. I tend to shoot high. I like to shoot over those deer, you know.
Yeah, so, that makes sense. I've done that a few times while sitting.
So you
on
need
the
to
ground.
Practice whatever you're doing. You need to practice. I shoot better off my knees. Like if I'm calling in an elk or something, I want to be able to, and that's more like standing prone off your feet. So.
We've all heard the saying, a picture tells a thousand words, and the same can be said for deer mounts. A skull on the wall represents so much more than just a successful hunt. It represents the culmination of lots of work, some luck, and rich memories with friends and family. At Just One, we like to hang our skulls with skull hangers from Kibosh Outdoors. The hangers are secure, super easy to set up, and made in the U.S. They even have hangers for as little as $9 to get your skull sitting proudly at the perfect angle. Go check them out at KiboshOutdoors.com or follow the link in our bios and use code JUSTONE at checkout to save 10% on your order.
After you picked up a traditional bow, how long was it? How long did it take you to get used to it to harvest your first bow?
Okay, so this is a kind of a cool story. And you know, we spoke earlier, Brian, about me harvesting all those critters and stuff. So the first year when I was 20 years old, I actually shot 6 deer.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I did not find any of them.
Oh.
So I'm ready to break this thing in half, throw it in half, throw it away, and, you know, put it in the garbage and never look back, you know. Mm-hmm. But I kind of persevered. I shot more. You know, I really thought it was an equipment malfunction. I had some good blood trails, but and I made some great shots. I just felt like I wasn't. I don't know. I was coming from a compound into trad, and there's some things that compound shooters do, or I did as a compound shooter, or even a crossbow shooter. That shot angle, quartering two a little bit, I can punch through the shoulder. You know, quartering two, I can thread the needle between the shoulder blade and go in and get into the vitals. You know, with the trad gear, because you don't have that energy or you don't have that extreme power to try to, you know, even to try to manipulate those angles, you know, now knowing what I know, that first hard year of me learning primitive hunting is if it ain't perfectly broadside, or I even prefer 95% prefer, I'll wait till that deer is slightly quartering and I cut more stuff. I like to come in off that back rib, come through the liver into the lungs. So I watch that deer die every time.
Quartering away then.
Quartering away is my go-to shot. I'll wait. I mean, but that first year I had to learn to wait and look for that perfect angle. Okay. Yeah. That's a really hard lesson to learn. It doesn't sound like that, you know, that you want to go through that experience. But if you talk to these trad guys, they'll tell you some of these tips, you know. The other thing is I switch from, you know, Zwicky broadheads have killed a lot of deer. I couldn't get them sharp, you know. Mm-hmm. When we're archery hunting, we're killing by hemorrhaging, so we want to make things bleed. Okay. Yep. So I couldn't get those Zwickies super sharp, and so I switched broadheads. The next year I killed with the DMAP, I killed 13 deer with a longbow the next year. Didn't lose one, you know.
Yeah.
So that's for 1 year from the other. And just trying to learn those angles, making sure my equipment was super razor sharp. I'm not buying broadheads out of a package that are chemically sharpened, you know.
Yeah.
So just tweaking your gear, making sure things are sharp, kind of relearning bow hunting in a completely different way. And it's made me a better hunter, you know.
Yeah. So we want to be respectful of your time. I know you're helping guys build bows.
So far, nobody's come and tugged. Hey, right. Mike, you know, president, you know, anything. So we can hang out and if somebody comes up and grabs one, we can close it out. Or if y'all want to keep.
Oh, we can keep rolling if you have time. Yep. I just wanted to be respectful of your time.
Yeah, for sure. But
so what would be your favorite hunting story when it comes to traditional hunting?
Favorite hunting story. That is really tough. So I've been blessed and as a 37-year-old, I have bucket list type dreams.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you one, but I'll probably tell you a couple. But a couple of years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago, some friends of mine, I used to do flint napping Friday and bow building at my houses on Friday night. And they're in northern Oklahoma. And what we do, the local people from this chapter that were close to me, I'd say, hey, you know, I'd make a Facebook post, come over Friday night, I'll cook, bring your bows, we're going to work together on bows, we'll do some flint napping. And so that local group, some of my buddies, Conrad Kleinholz was one of my best friends. He was my vice president for a little bit with Oklahoma Self-Bow Society. We had COVID. He became president during COVID, actually recontracted. He beat cancer in his life, recontracted cancer, and passed away not too long ago. So, but before he did, in 2019, we one of those Flint Napping Fridays, going back, one of those Flint Napping Fridays, we're just sitting down there, and him and Rick Myers and myself, Rick's over here teaching in the camp. He's one of my best friends. We're like, hey, what's on your bucket list, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we're moose float hunt with a self-bow is my top. You know, I've not got to do that yet, but on there was I told those guys, I said, man, I want to do the Dalton Highway caribou hunt, you know, hunt off the hunt there just north of the Brooks Range, the Hull Road. And so we did it in 2019. Rick, Conrad, myself, and my dad, we got to go up there and hunt caribou. Now, we did not bring any caribou home, but we caught grayling on fly rods. We missed some caribou, okay?
Man.
We got great stories, and then, you know, 2 years later, Conrad's not with us anymore. So that's something that I'll cherish, you know, forever is those memories made with my buddies, hunting up there on the Hull Road.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I'm a diehard elk hunter, turkeys, anything I can call to is kind of my game.
Yeah.
But anyways, those special places, that Alaska trip was super special. I've hunted black bears in Prince Wales Island and had a really good trip there. But, hunting elk in the backcountry is super cool.
Yeah, I got to experience that for the first time. I took my compound out. And me and my buddies went out, and opening day, I was able to shoot one. And it was just like I was addicted.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to go back, and I guess we'll announce it on this podcast because I haven't announced it officially yet. But I agreed with my wife, you know, hey, no big trip this year. And literally 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from a buddy, and he goes, hey, so Alaska. And that's all he said. And I'm like, to hunt what? And he goes, moose. And I'm like, all right, I'm in. And, you
awesome,
know,
dude.
Convinced my wife a little bit. But so in September, I get to kind of go up there and do the
super
same
nice.
Thing. He's going with a rifle, and then I'm going to take my bow.
Awesome.
And
super cool.
Gonna try
Did y'all
to
draw tags?
No, we're going over the counter.
Nice. Yep. Super nice. Float trip or drive-in
we
or
don't
drop
know yet.
Camp? Yeah,
We're trying to figure
that
out.
So me, I'm a researcher. You know, I'm looking at Onyx and reading books. And Jay Massey was a trad guy from Oklahoma that moved to Alaska, had the Moose John Outfitters. You know, so there's some history with float trip moose hunting with self-bows for an Okie. You know, so that's really the tip-top for me.
Man, that sounds like a great trade.
But you got to have the right guy with you. You know, that's a life or death type deal. You got to be able to know water, run rafts, know how to pack gear, you know. But that's the kind of thrill I'm looking for. Congratulations, Austin. I'm excited for you. We have to stay in touch just so I know what's going on.
I'll keep you updated. Yeah, it's going to be the trip of a lifetime. Yeah. But I'm kind of jealous of your Dalton Highway trip.
Well, like that's a cool that's hunt, one that you know, I'd do. And really, I mean, I don't know how big your listener population is out there or whatever, but if you guys have caribou on your list, the last kind of hoorah is Alaska, and those herds keep dwindling, and eventually that may not ever be over-the-counter again. You know, mm-hmm. we're kind of seeing that with Colorado and elk right now and over-the-counter. Caribou populations continue to decline, those Alaska over-the-counter caribou tags will be gone. Yeah. You know, so.
Which is just, it just stinks. I mean.
Oh, man. Know, anything
like,
that.
And elk is like that one that it's more attainable than like an Alaskan hunt.
For sure.
And to see states like Colorado start to move that way, I think. They sent me their little whatever it is, their booklet,
right.
And they had something that was like they're limiting over the counter for like residents in certain.
So that Northwest that got hammered last year in the winter kill, you mm-hmm. know, they are limiting that. Yeah, for sure.
And yeah. I feel like it's just the start because I mean there's so many different aspects we could go with this with the wolves and all of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, if you guys want me to jump on the phone anytime and talk to you, I don't mind. But this is my life. I'm super blessed to do what I do for a living. My wife and I own a restaurant where I'm from. I also own an outdoor store called Grit and Grace Outdoors back home, and you know my dad runs that now. And so just super blessed, and I like to give back to the outdoor community. I do a lot of volunteer work through Quail Forever, Pheasants Forever, this group, Oklahoma Self-Bow Society. If I'm outside in God's creation, I'm happy.
Amen to that. I think your caribou story sums it up perfect with, like, a lot of people who don't know hunting tend to think that it's all about the kill, but it wasn't about the kill at all for you. It was about the experience with your buddies. And it would have been cool to bring back some meat, but at the same time, that's not the most important thing.
You've got it, man. The memories we make with our friends are so special. Real quick, I'll tell one last story and we can end. And this past season, you know, so I've guided whitetail hunters my whole life. We live in Oklahoma, which is kind of a really hot state. I live right on the Oklahoma-Kansas line. And, you know, my brother and I, we've ate and breathed big deer, you know. And I manage big deer for a living, you know, and that can become monotonous, you know, the big deer, the big horn game, you know, guiding, and outfitting, you know, television shows and that sort of thing. And really the only thing that folks are caring about is what's that thing score, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, you go out and kill a deer with a self bow. You don't care what it scores. You can kill a nubby buck with milk on its lips, and you are one happy dude. It's the best kill of your life.
Right.
You know, you're on cloud nine because, man, I built this bow. I might have built this arrow. I might have flint-napped this, you know, this point that I put on there, and we killed an animal. So this past season, you know, we do a members hunt, the Oklahoma Self-Bow Society. We don't only do OJAM. We ask that you become a member if you want to be put in a class to build a bow, okay? But we're going to have a rendezvous in June during Father's Day weekend. We're going to have the Oklahoma Self-Bow Championship 3D shoot. We're going to have our members camp out in the fall, and that's also our deer hunt, you know? So we normally do it up on our public land up there where I live. I host it. We do a fish fry on Saturday night, potluck. But anyways, this year, so I get off work a little bit early. Zach Smith and I, another good friend of mine, we go in and we scout a spot on public. I live right on public. You know, I grew up there my whole life. I've never killed a deer on public. I've killed lots of turkeys on public. My dad's place borders public. I killed some deer on public. But as an adult, grown adult, since I was a kid, I really hadn't hunted public much.
Yeah.
And so to go in, do a hanging hunt, hung two spots for my boys. I got a 14-year-old boy named Aspen and a 12-year-old boy named Huck, Saxton Huck, named after Saxton Pope, and Aspen because I love to elk hunt, you know, after the trees.
I love it.
Anyway, so pretty cool. So I got both boys with me. Zach goes in. We find a spot. I could do a hanging hunt, get them in spots on some acorns. It's early October. and those deer are just hammering acorns. You know, red oaks are actually falling early. I'm trying to target white oaks. Actually, there's blackjacks. And anyway, so we go in. I'm the furthest in, you know, and not long before, and I kind of get there after I get the boys set up. I'm in there kind of late, after five, you know.
Yeah.
And I get hung in there in my saddle and kind of settle in, and not too long, here comes two bucks, you know, and they're coming down a trail. And with the saddle, you got to kind of pick what side of the tree you're going to be on. And so one deer kind of turns, and I'm on the left side of the tree, thinking that that's going to be my shot opportunity. Well, the other one splits off the trail and comes right in front where I was at.
Oh, man.
So I've got to kind of, with a longbow, and I got an arrow sticking out, I kind of got to slide back, you know, and get on the other side of the tree. When I do, he's at 10 yards, you know. And I draw back and shoot and smoke him, you know, just hits him. He runs about 25 yards, loses his balance, and tips over.
Oh,
you know,
man.
He's a spike buck. You know, I'm having,
yeah,
you know,
you're jacked up.
I'm just like, man, this is the greatest thing ever. I got to see him die. You know, I know where he's at. I got both my boys with me. They can help me drag him back to the truck.
That's the important part.
We get
right
to take
there.
Him back to camp, butcher him for everybody. We get tenderloin and heart right over the campfire with all my friends. You know, it's that's the best thing there is.
Right.
You know, I did not care how big this Arkansas 11 pointer was. Hopefully I don't offend any of your Arkansas fans, anyways, just kill a spike buck, it's like I killed 150 inch. I killed 150 inch deer at the end of the season. The spike meant more to me than the other one.
Man, so that's really cool.
Yeah.
So to wrap up here, we do a section called Around Our Campfire. And it's just a little piece of advice. If we're sitting around a campfire, and I want to kind of present the question of, you know, what advice would you give someone who maybe is a compound like me, compound and looking at doing something like longbow, self-bow, something like that? Yeah,
man, I'm going to go a little bit broader, and then I might even talk on a little bit about that. So I'm super passionate about passing things on and getting people involved and doing women's events and kids events through the Quail Forever stuff. Is I don't care if you shoot a compound, a recurve, you know, a trad bow, a crossbow, or you just shoot rifle. I don't really care. Mm-hmm. You know, what I do want you to do is find you a friend, a buddy, somebody that maybe used to hunt, doesn't hunt anymore. Take them out.
Yeah.
Make a memory with them. Take a kid out, your neighbor kid. It don't have to be your kid. You know, everybody's so scared of the world we live in, and somebody saying that you did something to a kid. You know, what about the guy, the neighbor guy that helped you out learn how to throw a baseball? What about the guy that helped you get a Rotambo? Saturday here at O-Jam, we're going to give every kid 12 and under a free longbow and three arrows, okay?
That's awesome.
That was Conrad's deal. We used to just give away bows. We forgot to give away arrows, you know? So what do you do? What does a kid do with a bow with no arrows? Nothing, you know? So we're like, what do we give them three for? Well, they're going to have one to break, one to lose, and one to shoot.
Yeah,
so we give them three arrows. You know, just mentor. Be a mentor to somebody, you know? If we don't do all the right things and do the good, we got people on the far right, we got people on the far left, and we got a bunch of people on the gray. They don't know what side they want to be on. We've got to be good examples, you know.
Yeah.
But just a guy looking in, if you're looking for a challenge, come to OJAM, build a self-bow, look us up, okselfbow.com. We'd love for you to join our family.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is one thing I would say I have noticed out here. It is a family. You got guys at these different camps, but everybody is a family out here that's been coming here for, even if this is their first year, they're sitting in there making their first self-bow that they didn't even know what a stave was until they got here yesterday and picked out a piece of wood on that trailer.
Y'all heard me say it earlier that you're going to meet your new best friend. Well, Austin and I just become best friends because I got to know how this moose hunt turns out.
Oh, heck yeah.
yeah, absolutely.
Heck yeah, you're going to find out.
Yeah,
cool. I'll call you from the backcountry.
Yeah, awesome. Guys, thanks for having me, and Just Went Outdoors here at O-Jam.
Let's go.